Born in the pandemic era, thriving in the Zoom era, it's Resonance Rewind.
Previously on Resonance Rewind. So a slight change, because we've obviously had Doom Patrol Episode 1 analysed in depth by Pamela Suman and Phil Leonis, interesting in terms of the views they came to the fore for this. But what about Jessica Bertus? Jessica, your thoughts on this opening episode of the DC DP characters and how they actually opened up the whole adventure?
Yeah, so I had never seen this show before, which I have been surprised I hadn't heard more about this. I feel like I heard more about Titans than about Doom Patrol, which is crazy because Doom Patrol is actually good, in my opinion, and I really am not a fan of Titans. But I thought it was such an interesting beginning episode. It's definitely like that introductory kind of episode where they have to introduce everybody and kind of get their backstories down. So I feel like it's kind of like that. To me, it didn't really exactly feel like the first episode so much as kind of like the getting to know everybody and their backstories before you jump into the actual plot kind of an episode, which I think I actually enjoy those kinds of kind of introductions, but I can see how some people might prefer something a bit more like intertwined with the plot. But of course, if they're already all together, you have to kind of have that grounding. But I thought it was really well done, in my opinion. I feel like the Grant Morrison era of Doom Patrol is kind of the most iconic of the comics for me. And there's been the new Doom Patrol with Gerard Way authoring and being the artist. But I think that having the show was really cool to see. I think they did the Rita's little elastic blob very interestingly. That was the most iconic part of the show to me. It was like how they did that. That was really interesting. And getting to see Cliff, which he looks so different than how I had pictured in my head, or even with the art, seeing like the actual version of him in the live version looks very different. I think the costumes and their appearances were kind of one of the things that stood out to me the most, because you can tell that the costume department worked very hard on how they each look. I think that all of their clothing also is such an interesting choice, especially Rita's. Rita is, I think, has been my favorite in this episode. And I think how she often wears kind of classical 50s silhouettes from her background in theater that are more like they're more like they fit to her, but then she's elastic. So then her powers are kind of this like becoming shapeless. So I think that was a very interesting little thing that they did, but I've enjoyed it.
There we are. Thumbs up across the base then. So far we've had, or at least last week, we had characteristics or favorite characters ranging from Dr. Niles through, of course, Rita Farr through Crazy Jane, who I think probably just about edged it. What about your own favorite character, Jessica?
I like Rita a lot in this. I think she is a complex character, and I think her just hearing her say I want to go home, you know, after all the wreckage in the city with her elasticity happening, I think that was really moving. I think in the comics it's kind of I always like seeing Beast Boy from especially because he's in Teen Titans, but as far as the show goes, Rita.
Yeah, and of course we do see Cyborg emerge in the second episode in this particular run, which I think is called Donkey Patrol. So a whole range of things happening from that as well. So your mark out of 10 for the season one opener to Doom Patrol.
I think I'm going to give it a 7.5. I want to keep watching it. I think the character introductions just are not my most favorite type of episodes, just because it takes a little bit to get into the plot. But I do want to keep watching this show and see how the rest of it goes. I thought it was really good. I liked it.
And I think for once we are all agreed, because with Phil Leonis, Pamela Suman, and myself, and yourself, Jessica, we've all gone for that 7.5 score. There we are. I was tempted to maybe move up to an 8, but I think 7.5 is probably fair enough in terms of the opener and so on. This has been an opener to last week's Resonance Rewind, and the time continues to move because now we're heading to deal with the Man from Atlantis.
A deep ocean storm carries a strange being to shore, and he nears a death that medical science cannot stop. Until a marine scientist returns him to the ocean and makes him live. Where is he from? the computer guesses. He is named Mark Harris and put through a series of tests to calculate his speed, agility, and strength. Though allowed to return to his ocean existence, Mark decides to help us further our exploration of the oceans and wants to gain knowledge about his human friends.
I have not learned enough.
And now?
There we have it. Of course, the almost hypnotic sound of the musical theme to Man from Atlantis, of course, composed by Fred Carlin. And I shall try and avoid going through the entire piece of Resonance Rewinds today without mentioning fish out of water lines in any way, shape or form. But let's find out what people who are first exposed to the Man from Atlantis, literally as we're recording this show, on World Oceans Day. Can you actually get any better than that in terms of Resonance Rewind? What did the team think of it? Well, we're turning first and foremost to ace singer-songwriter, currently back in France, of course. That's the wonderful Victoria Simmons. Victoria, what were your thoughts on this September the 24th, 1977, 100-minute pilot that actually was directed by Lee Katzin, written by Mayo Simon, and of course brought us to the land of a man who presumably, according to the wondrous computer that I believe is the WRW-1200 computer, could conceivably be seen as the last citizen of Atlantis. Your thoughts, please, Victoria.
I had mixed emotions about this, actually. To start with, I thought it was terrible. And then I got into it, which kind of surprised me, actually.
It does have that way of kind of weaving its way into the viewer's line. I mean, it's one of those areas which it's often very much a series that's been looked back on with mixed emotions. As I say, many people say that it started off with a very strong pilot. And then, of course, we sort of decided to go down a line which was a little bit too crazy. The irritant for me, actually, and remained in the series when I felt he was actually overused, was, of course, Victor Buono's character of Mr. Schubert. I'm not sure how you felt about this Bond-esque villain who literally 20 years after being a collector of sea junk had managed to collect sufficient sea junk, and as the original Recycle King, had effectively put together a sequence and an island that could effectively have led to total Armageddon within the major superpowers. I mean, that to me stretched credibility just a tad.
Yes, and right at the bottom of the trench, where not many people and even machines can actually go. So that stretched it even further than the Man from Atlantis.
Yeah, I mean, the Mariana Trench aspect was there. I think the original plan of the program makers was to follow the success of another superhero of the 1970s, i.e. the $6 Million Man, and to open up the opportunities for that. And just as the $6 Million Man had four separate pilots before they actually went to series, they kind of followed that pathway with respect to this one. Some of the key things which I thought were very strong, I thought Belinda Montgomery's performance as Dr. Elizabeth Murrell was excellent, and again she remains a staple of the series. Patrick Duffy, again, I think it was his first major break. I mean, we heard recently how Phil Lynas actually was recently supping at Patrick Duffy's Hollywood bar, amongst other things, and was confusing his work as Mark Harris and The Man from Atlantis with Simon McCorkendale in Manimal, which is another short-lived series. But as the thing developed, I mean, there were a number of aspects here which I think were alluding to not only the Cold War, not only the sort of things we face today in terms of the ocean, in terms of how we relate to that, but also the way in which the narrative moves along. I mean, I think, you know, we start off with that initial social line, and of course the invitation to the party for Elizabeth and her escort for the evening, with the line, "Do I see some friendlies? Oh, do we need some lively young people in here?" Again, how did you feel the actual narrative developed and expanded in terms of obviously the character of Dr. Elizabeth Murrell and more?
Yeah, it did expand, but at the beginning you left thinking, what are they doing? Because she's okay being a doctor and comes to help him, and then how does she know to go into the ocean with him? And why aren't the other people that are around her stopping her from what looks like drowning?
This is certainly something which
literally pushed him underwater, and to someone from the side, surely that looks like they're drowning and or being murdered or something terrible. But no, they just stand and go, "Oh yeah, she knows what she's doing."
Obviously, back in the 1970s, if you were a woman with a PhD in marine biology, clearly you would instantly be able to actually take that as a must go to thing. These days, I suspect there are a number of challenges that would have been put in her route before she could actually wheeled Mark Harris out of the operating theatre, got him actually to the ocean, and actually obviously brought him back to life in what actually symbolic or sort of was for me very symbolic of a rebirth, a baptism in many ways. We see that plunging into the water and the notion of Harris being born again, even the name that he's actually given. We call him Mark Harris. And of course, the first thing he's put to use for is, well, how can we actually apply the skill set of this individual to the American military and the defense, where, of course, the Admiral Pierce. Yes, there is an echo there of our very own Robin Pierce, much missed. But clearly from that side of things, his line about what he controls and how he's responsible for the defense of the country and so on. We spoke earlier how Jessica is currently battling away through a sheep tour, which she's not going to finish on time. So she'll probably come in again at the back end of the show, which is slightly fitting, as I say. It is World Oceans Day. Kathy Manso, I'm not sure whether you watched this in Spanish or whether you watched it in English. What are your initial thoughts on the pilot episode of Man from Atlantis?
First of all, it's El Hombre del Atlantis. And I did watch it in Spanish because I didn't have the English option when I had to watch it through the desktop of a computer. It was truly a struggle, but I think I preferred it in Spanish. It was entertaining. I don't know if it was for the right reasons, but I raised the same concerns as Victoria. You know, Patrick Duffy, as they say in Spanish, is truly a star in his role. There were some holes for me, and I do speak Spanish. I understood it completely. I mean, maybe one or two words, but like the plot is understood. And I think what was weird with the voiceover is I still could see them act, so you could see the faces, but I was just kind of confused as to why she was so proud of him. Like this weird Stockholm syndrome reaction to Mark, although it should be the other way around, but even when he has to reach for the fish, which, like, why'd they give him a fish? It could have been anything he was grabbing for, but whatever, I digress. There's a few plot holes. I still had a good time, and I am curious to see how the next episode is, but definitely some holes in this.
Yeah, I mean, that again was something I thought, were we actually dealing with this human being or being from Atlantis as somebody who effectively, yes, was a water-breathing individual, again, Elizabeth's character is first introduced to us basically as somebody who has that expertise, but, you know, a water-breathing man, a man who's forgotten how to breathe. And yet, let's say we have the race with the dolphin in order to actually get the fish and the whole system. Now, I know, Kathy, you're not a fan of dolphins to start off with. You feel they've had over the years, even on World Oceans Day, and we are very keen to keep stressing that, because literally a matter of hours ago, a little plug for another program, which Alyssa will hear in due course, I was dealing with marine biologists from your original neck of the woods in Florida, Kathy, who were actually returning sea turtles to the Florida Keys. So, you know, again, there but for a slight quirk of DNA, those sea turtles could have been, again, citizens of Atlantis and so on. So I think that notion of how things are being panned out is important.
And sea turtles are delightful, first of all. Like, there's a lot of, you know, awful things about my state, but not the sea turtles. The sea turtles are a delight. They are protected. They are loved, you know. I mean, growing up, I remember there's still areas of the beach that they block off specifically because it's in the sand, there's sea turtles, like, there's eggs, and they're waiting for their time to go into the ocean. So, also, big fan of Crush in Finding Nemo. I think that's enough said, you know?
Which is another show we'll probably be continuing, or another narrative we'll certainly be continuing. In case people are wondering, and we'll steer away from this real life crossover with the Man from Atlantis. The two people we were speaking to were Dr. David Vaughan, who was concerned about coral in the oceans, and Betty Zirkelbach, who indeed was the founder of the Sea Turtle Hospital, indeed, that actually sort of exists. And the two sea turtles themselves, well, one of them was actually called Nacho, and again, he had a range of other aspects within the whole field. And the other sea turtle that was actually there, who was also suffering initially from fibropapillomatosis, or FP, which is a tumor-forming disease, the other one was Spencer. So we wish Spencer and Nacho well. They were released a few hours ago, quite literally, by the manager of the Turtle Hospital, released into the Florida Florida Keys from Higgs Beach in Key West to actually mark World Ocean Day. So again, just sort of echoing that. Victoria, we've kind of gone a little bit off point there, but I'm sure you don't mind, just so we actually gave a nod to our 21st century citizens of the ocean, Spencer and Nacho, two sea turtles who are quite safely swimming, we hope, in the Atlantic Ocean at least. But let's get back to this particular side of things, Victoria. What about how the plot unfolded, how it developed, how Mark Harris effectively connected very much with the banter, the whole notion of having the Raz working through that? How effectively the first words that Patrick Duffy as Mark Harris actually utters are indeed, yes, I say yes to the Admiral. I say yes.
No, this is all totally wrong. It's part of my hated part. And it's totally wrong. I mean, I don't want to say too much in front of Kathy. I mean, for the Americans and having to be with their security system. That's
We're in a safe space, Victoria. We're in a safe space. Don't worry. Kathy will cope with
this. I think I wrote down, like, we'll tickle Americans. We're going to protect him. Really? Are you wanting to protect him? No, you're wanting to use him. And the fact that he just suddenly comes out in an perfect American accent and doesn't have any problems speaking or understanding is, by my reckoning, a little bit too far-fetched.
Kathy, I mean, do you feel that the potential, maybe through telepathic content or communications, that our green-eyed citizen of the deep with the webbed finger, the webbed hands and feet and so on, and of course the icon of the series for so many people, the tight yellow swimming briefs, from that particular perspective, was it, as Victoria said, this was a one ocean leap too far?
Well, look, I think it's a trope at this point where if the U.S. government's involved, it's not a good thing. Like, we know this. It's not anything new. And I mean, even me as the American, the minute they were involved, I was like, well, they don't actually want to help him. But like, who would? You know, what allegiance do they have to this random stranger from water? So I think I'm just painfully aware that they're going to use him for military procedures. Like, and also in the reality of things, is this, if, not to say that this show has much reality, but if there was some, whether it was a machine or a person that they think they could use to benefit them, I think they would have treated them way cooler, you know, for similar to ET situation, in my opinion.
So, and there is that connection with ET, I suppose you could say. I mean, perhaps, you know, a little bit underrated. Obviously, this was 5 years before wonderful Steven Spielberg aspect worked through that. But I mean, the line that Admiral Dewey Pierce actually says to Mark Harris, orders are when people older and wiser tell us what to do. We do it. That's how we get things done, by obeying orders. And as long as you're here, you have to obey orders too. That's pretty totalitarian. That could probably be taken as the sort of line Vladimir Putin would actually be using, couldn't it?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you know, there's no reason. This is what I mean by, like, it's been done. We've seen this. And we've seen it, and not just in films, but we've also seen this in reality. You know, the reality is, if we see that a government could have access or control to a situation, they will take advantage of it. It's historical at this point. We have evidence to it.
So it still sadly continues to connect from that point of view. Okay, let's move on to what for me is even more irritating than Admiral Dewey Pierce, I should have to say. But I think ultimately, yes, he was okay. Although I must admit, Lieutenant Ainsley, for me, it's nip and tuck in terms of most irritating character. Not a category we normally talk about on Resonance Rewind. But Lieutenant Ainsley, who is obviously the Admiral Pierce's aide-de-camp, his line, morning, Doctor, the Admiral has a job for your fish, to which Elizabeth Murrow rightly replies, his name is Mark Harris. I feel if he carried on, I would have got progressively more irritated with Lieutenant Ainsley until, of course, Mr. Schubert arrives, known to many, of course, back in the day as being the quintessential King Tut villain in the Batman 1966 series with Adam West and so on. But we do have the whole notion of, again, Mr. Schubert's interaction. Tell me, how did you manage to get here? I swam, says Mark Harris. Aha. Yeah, the fish told you how to reach our door. I do not speak the language of fish. The inner current took me to the deep sound channel, and I listened to the whales talk. How did we feel, Victoria, about... And let's talk irritated. I mean, was Mr. Schubert somebody who thought, well, that's okay? I mean, he's the original recycle king. He had the temerity to use the phrase, there'll be a hot town in the hot time in the old town tonight, as he proceeded to actually move towards global Armageddon. I mean, we were only 3 seconds away from the ultimate conflagration, really, in this particular episode. Any thoughts on characters that kind of, we won't talk favourite ones as yet, but ones which you just thought, I don't know.
No, well, unfortunately, the Doctor's character kind of fades because you're supposed to hate him and he is horrible, but then they give them a bracelet that they've been controlling the other people with and suddenly you've got no villain.
Yeah, I mean, that again, the colour-coded... specifically color-coded bracelets that effectively took a person's will away, apart, of course, from the Atlantean or indeed ocean-dwelling, ocean-breathing Mark Harris, who managed to successfully avoid that. Cathy, what about yourself? I'm not sure whether that irritation would have come across in the Spanish version, but maybe it did, maybe it didn't.
Well, in Spanish, you know, it was interesting because Spanish uses more, I wouldn't say advanced language, but the reality is because of its Latin roots, I think in English it would be considered a more advanced, and so it could come off more aggressive than if you're trying to be casual, especially if you don't know the language as well as like people who are actually speaking it, right? Like the purpose for it. So they have certain lines where I was like, whoa, that's brutal. But you have to remind yourself that, right, this is in Spanish, so that would be the right way to translate it, you know? And I get a little picky with some things because I think I get a little sucked into, they could have translated that better, or, you know, I'm not too sure who is responsible for that. But irritation, I guess, I was getting more irritated with the Elizabeth, I believe her name was, right? The main character, the woman doctor. Not that she didn't play her role well. I'm not trying to say that either. But it was just, it's exactly what Victoria was pointing out at the beginning. It was, just her being allowed to do almost anything she wanted, and everyone just, I mean, she had a little bit of resistance, but the reality was, it's like, why wouldn't she communicate that she understands why this person needs to go to the water, you know? Like, how does she know that? What's her background in this? You know, my understanding was she was a doctor, but all of a sudden she's in the water, and she's a marine biologist, and then, you know, it's like one thing after another where I'm like, what is your background? And I don't think that's against her, the actor. I think it's more about maybe we just don't know enough about the character, especially as it's the pilot episode.
One character we haven't mentioned, who again seemed to be a somewhat bland cipher, but it does connect with another show we have considered in times past, which emerged in the 1980s and also via Steven Spielberg, is of course the captain of the Sequest DSV. Just wonder where Sequest DSV, the series of the same name, actually was inspired by this particular aspect. But the chap who effectively obviously has a fondness for Dr. Elizabeth Merrill, and at the party, even when she's been called away, says, there's something I want to say to you, and so on. Again, I just thought it was very difficult to see, even when he had his will taken away from him, how different his particular character was and what we were seeing in terms of that. I mean, it does seem as though I'm going through irritating aspects of this particular series, where, as I said, the music and other aspects really kind of still gives a fondness for me. But let's talk characters. I mean, we moved on to that now, whether they're favoured or less favoured, etc. Victoria, who for you would be folk that you'd actually like to have a cup of seaweed tea with, perhaps?
Probably the diver that went down with him. Because I think he was quite an interesting character. I mean, he didn't get to do much, but I'm sort of like, what was it like when you suddenly realized there's somebody you go down, 20,000 feet, I think he went down to. And what was it like just suddenly not actually doing anything? And someone else just taking off all his clothes, except the shorts, of course, and going swimming even further. I mean, surely your oxygen's going to run out if you've got a panic attack. That would really happen to me. But I liked his character, actually.
Ernie Smith, of course, played by Dean Santoro, who came up from that point of view. Yeah, I think given the challenges that he was actually faced with and how he was very much, you know, at the behest of encountering the unknown. I mean, it was a classic case of, we know this, we'd seen this happen inevitably with respect to the superhero trope, whether it's Steve Austin, whether it's Jamie Summers, whether it's, again, the equivalent of Manimal, or any of those aspects. So we know that the audience are going to buy into that because the audience clearly knows what they're seeing, what they're about to see, which is beyond the character of what he's actually seeing, and so on. What about yourself, Kathy? I mean, again, written by Mayo Simon. It has been said that they were trying in places to replicate the success of Star Trek. I saw that in some of the original interviews for this series by the producers and likewise the director, Lee Katzen, etc. And that was one of the aspects where, you know, Mark Harris was almost a cipher for the character of Spock in terms of somebody who is partly human, but not quite human. And we see ourselves as human beings through their eyes and so on, especially if they're being employed by the military. But what about your favorite characters, Kathy?
Someone that kind of surprised me, just because I could relate with him and he had literally no words, was the kid that opened the phone box for Mark. he did exactly his role right, because he just kind of looked at him like, duh. Like, what's up, man? Can you not? And I like the shout out character for Jack in the Box, the woman who's taking the order. Also, do you guys know Jack in the Box?
This was another point I was going to address, because may I take your order, please? May I take your order, please? Clearly getting very concerned. I'm not familiar with it. Victoria, are you familiar with this drive-through phenomenon called Jack in the Box?
No, not at all.
Kathy, enlighten us.
It is like any fast food restaurant. You can eat inside. You can go through the drive-through. I mean, that's obviously very old, like the brand that they're showing you. But I mean, it's still the same. It still has like, it's literally a Jack in the Box, you know, the toy that you play with and something pops out. So I think I haven't had Jack in the Box in years, but I think the thing to get would be corn dogs was like an option on the menu, which, you know, very American thing, I guess, but you can get burgers, chicken, you know, things like that. But yeah, I didn't, that's why I want to give the shout out to the woman in there, because I, you know, if I think about going through an American drive-through now, and unless it's like Chick-fil-A or In-N-Out where they're forced to be nice to you, they would not be nice about it or worry. They'd be like, move, get out. Next.
It's interesting you mentioned that there, because I had assumed that this was a play on the McDonald's Burger King aspect, but there is a genuine Jack in the Box that exists.
It's a national chain.
Wow. I mean, Victoria, any chance that that's going to be invading France shortly?
No.
No,
definitely not. Unless they sell quiche and brioche, then it won't be doing very well.
I cannot imagine Jack in the Box being anywhere but the United States. I cannot.
You mentioned, of course, the child who opens the telephone booth. Of course, itself very symbolic in terms of the superhero genre, because what does Superman change into? What does Clark Kent use to actually convert from his mild-mannered identity into a superhero? But of course, the telephone box. So again, an interesting little nod in that direction, which again, I thought worked quite nicely. So those were kind of honourable mentions. Anything else that you'd like to sort of say, or any other characters that you thought? Yeah, I mean, we haven't really got your thoughts on Victor Buono as Mr. Schubert. Kathy?
Mine or Victoria? Oh, sorry. What? No, I know who it was. I'm thinking about the character. No, you know what? It's one of those situations where no news is good news. in a sense, like I think he personally, for me, I think he played the role well. I think it's hard for me to comment because I didn't actually hear his voice. It's the voiceover, but I understood the plot and I understood the context, and I think he was reflecting well as to what was happening. But I think that's why it's a little bit harder for me to be giving more credit to the actors, because I'm so focused on their voice actors, who did a great job, by the way.
I think, because I did actually check in my very own laptop computer that you could actually choose the English language option. But never mind, that's another line entirely. But you chose to get Spanish.
I forced Ryan to help me. The station manager of Siren Radio was present and laughing at me so that I was watching it in Spanish. And I asked him to figure this out because I've clicked each and every option. And I see where this says you can hear in the original. I was clicking, didn't let me.
No, not a problem. We'll work through that. That's another little meta narrative, a bit like our two wonderful sea turtles. A quote from Mr. Schubert. Schubert, of course, forgive me. My affliction is the result of warped adulthood, toppled with an insatiable desire to be friendly. And I do want to be friendly with you. Come join me, Mark. Let's be friends. Sorry, I had to actually channel my inner Southern States aspect of Mr. Schubert there when he did want to be friendly to the whole system. Victoria, favorite characters from yourself?
I don't know. Yeah, I'm still always going to go back to the men.
To the diver.
The divers. Yeah.
So Ernie Smith, of course, who responded when Mark Harris says, it's better to have gills like you. Are you giving me the Raz? Excellent. Ernie Smith. Okay, so we've addressed a number of key aspects within that. I think we'd have to say it's flawed. There are challenges here. I do like the music. As I say, I think that the hypnotic notion of the music is excellent. I think it does carry with a number of key things that I feel kind of lost its way, although bizarrely, I think if you do stick with the other three remaining pilots, the hour and a half segments followed by the actual series itself, I think there are areas there that open up and are worth considering. Let's talk scores. Victoria, what's your score out of 10 going to be for this opening salvo from 1977, September 1977, Man from Atlantis?
Well, as I say, it was sort of two parts for me. And the first part was more of a 4. The second part became quite a bit higher because the overall was not too bad. So I ended up giving it a 6.
Yeah, I might be a little bit more generous, and because I think that they cope well, might push it for a 7. Kathy, yourself?
Genuinely, I was thinking a 6. So, watching both at the same time.
Proving that superheroes underwent quite a rapid evolutionary change, the next Resonance Rewind we'll be looking at in this particular series, of course, will be the epic Patrick Stewart, Ian McKellen, Brian Singer offering X-Men, in which we see a whole range of aspects going, plus, of course, Ellis Island, Statue of Liberty, given a whole new brief in terms of their particular lines and so on. Meanwhile, as we bid adieu to Spencer and Nacho, two of our sea turtles who are now swimming freely, we trust, in their own version of Atlantis, maybe actually encountering their own Mark Harris's. Still can't work out why Elizabeth Murrow actually chose Mark Harris as the name, because obviously John Doe would possibly have been the usual line you would have taken in a police procedural, but this isn't, so perhaps Mark Harris is the other equivalent. But thanks as ever to Victoria Simmons. Last Dance in the Rain, I suppose, would be a suitable number for this, given its water connections. Any other water songs you've produced, Victoria, which you would say, why not go for that one?
No, everything else seems to be a little more rocky.
Too dry. It would, Mark would be desiccated.
Although you could start with Last Dance in the Rain and then have a series of him coming out of the water to then the dry songs.
Exactly. And as long as he wasn't in the Earth environment for more than 12 hours, he wouldn't obviously desiccate himself and ultimately die through not having the water, the source of all life in so many ways.
I think probably Lion and the Lamb would be a good one, considering it's two very different people, fish, human, all getting along together. That might work.
And for those people, again, who realise I didn't give my own favourite character, I'm still going to stick with Dr. Elizabeth Merrill. I thought she did very well in terms of the system, and obviously had a lot of chutzpah in terms of how she could actually take charge of the patient. Even though obviously she would have probably been put under all sorts of restrictions in a contemporary world. So there we are. Hats off to Belinda Montgomery's portrayal of Dr. Elizabeth Murrell. So as we said, to Victoria Simmons and to Kathy Manso, huge thanks, and keep on resonating.
I was thrust into your arms by words cannot describe it. I knew you could do no harm. We are everything that shouldn't be, yet everything we are. Two unexpected lovers, this hope and our belief that we the devil loves an angel, and I don't know what to do, but we will run away together, baby, we'll lay upon the sand.
Love.